So I want to start by thinking about what we learned last time in Shar Yichud Emuna, Perek Dalet, and also Perek Gimel, and sort of taking a step back in terms of what it means. So the Shar Yichud Emuna basically was trying to argue for our non-existence. In other words, going back to Perek Gimel, the mashal was that just like the rays of the sun in the sun are batel, so too our mitzios is batel klape HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the way he understood, v'yadata yam v'shevos al vavachu ki Hashem elokim v'shamayim mimal v'yaretz mitachas ein od, that it's, again, ein od mamish. And so, as opposed to, let's say, the way the Rambam understood that pasuk, where ein od meant that ein od, we have no inherent or independent or necessary existence. Our existence is dependent upon HaKadosh Baruch Hu's wanting us to exist. So the Alter Rebbe said, no, it's ein od mamish. And that means that we are constantly being, the world is constantly being recreated and the like. At the same time, that was Perek Gimel. Perek Dalet, he said, aye, but how then do we exist? In other words, why isn't our Metzius batel? And he answered that by saying that there's this parallel force called Magen, called Gvura, called Elokim. So we have these parallels. There's Hashem, which is Chesed, which is so giving that, in a sense, there's no makom for our existence. But connected to that, there's the Gvura, right? Gadol and Gibor, Shemesh and Magen. The Magen is what protects us or allows for our existence. And that's the koach of tzimtzum, that's the koach of limitation, that's the koach of gvura, and that's how we do exist. And so even though it sounds like he's saying we can't exist, he's almost like saying we shouldn't exist, but there's this second koach that allows for our existence, and that's magen, that's gvura, that's elokim, etc., etc. So that is what he said in Perek Dalet. I want to go weiter a little bit, and also to take a step back in terms of what is the nature of this. So I put on the top of your sheets two passages from Halachic Man. A lot of times, the teachings of Tanya are contrasted with, let's say, Nefesh HaChaim, or contrasted with the Litvish approach or the like. I think sometimes what they say is much more similar than different, and we'll maybe see examples of that. And here we're not really contrasting it with Nefesh HaChaim, but we are contrasting it with Halachic Man, which is a very important work, which I think sort of depicts the hashkafa of, if you want, the Litvish yeshivish model, but in a philosophical way, which is a little ironic because they oppose any concept of philosophy. But I guess you're from Shar Torah, so you appreciate that. We don't. But anyway, so Halachic Man, and much of what you'll see in Halachic Man is developing in a different language, but actually ideas that are in Nefesh HaChaim.
Just letting you know, the message went out today that we're starting at 8:45. I don't know if anybody else is coming.
Nobody else knew that we're starting at 8:45.
The message ran out that we're starting at 8:45. The show and the...
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay, good.
So we'll see if people will start coming
so
in.
So we're going to... This is just a chazara. So we're only going to start at 8:45. But maybe we should make sure that everybody is on the same page now. Okay. So we... So taking a step back. So yes. So what does what's the Litvish approach to all this? So we contrasted it with the Rambam, but what about this? And in a sense, Rambam isn't Halachic Man. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about that in a moment.
Is not Halachic Man?
No. Rambam? No. He the Rambam and I'll explain why, actually, in a couple minutes. So, take a look here at where it says Halachic Man, page 40. Halachic Man was written in Hebrew, and the truth is that the Hebrew is very beautiful and oftentimes much clearer than the English, but sometimes it's the English is easier.
He wrote both the Hebrew and the English?
No. He wrote the Hebrew in very early, I think in like 1946. And the English was translated much later, like 1986, by Lawrence Kaplan.
83. They just had a 40th anniversary.
That's it, right. I saw that. So 43. So we're talking, so for a long time, there wasn't English, which is sort of interesting. And now it's a very good translation. I always thought it's a little, you know, it's a very hard work to translate because the work is not written in any normal language. In other words, it's Hebrew, Old Hebrew, Modern Hebrew, Latin, a little Greek, and that does make it hard, and that makes translating it hard. But anyway, so let's take a look at what it says over here. The only difference between homo religiosus is the foil, for the most part, of Halachic Man. In the work, the Rav contrasts three types of people. The English is cognitive man, which is sort of the scientific perspective. Homo religiosus, which in Hebrew is ish hadas. I always thought it was very strange that he decided to translate it homo ish hadas. There's ish hadas and ish hadas. Ish hadas is cognitive man. Ish hadas is homo religiosus. And ish halacha. But for some reason, homo ish hadas gets, instead of just saying religious man, he gets a Latin title.
What's homo mean in this context?
I mean, homo means man. So homo religiosus is just the Latin version of ish hadas. Hey, dalet, saf. Das. And so, you know, why doesn't cognitive man get, you know, homo cognito or something? But anyway, I was always, and I think sometimes people get scared of the work because they see the Latin, and so that turns it off. But anyway, so it's a work which contrasts these three people. And he uses homo religiosus and cognitive man really as foils for halachic man. And what he tries to do is very, very ambitious, which is depict a person, which maybe we sort of know people like this a little bit, so we could recognize it. But he actually tries to write it for the outside reader, and which is extraordinary. I mean, in the back there's a blurb from Time magazine when it first came out about how important this work is, which, like I said, is extraordinary because it's hard to imagine anyone appreciating this, let alone like somebody who reads Time magazine. But you know, maybe in 1983 there's a different readership in Time magazine. But so we have these three people, and as I said, they're foils. They're not real people. But what is the difference between homo religiosus and halachic man and cognitive man? So cognitive man rejects anything that isn't physical. He is a materialist, he's a scientist. If I see it, I can detect it, then it exists, and if not, it's of no interest to me. It doesn't exist. And obviously, both halachic man and homo religiosus are very different than that. They're religious people. So what's the difference between them? So the only difference between homo religiosus and halachic man, change, of course, I typed this up, I don't know what it says, change the course they travel in opposite directions. Homo religiosus starts out in this world and ends up in supernal realm. Halachic man starts off in supernal realms and ends up in this world. What he's saying is, really, I think we got an appreciation of this in this passage in Tanya that we just read. In other words, you start off in this world. We're all in this world. We're physical people. You know, we have to eat. If we don't eat lunch, we're hungry. Mm-hmm. As spiritual as you are, that's just the reality. But homo religiosus tries to transcend this world. elevate himself beyond this world, be above this world, not be a part of this world. And ad kedei kach, as we read in the previous chapter of Tanya, he basically denies existence. If the eyes were given permission to see, they wouldn't see this table here, they wouldn't see the roof here. I would look up and see Dvar Pi Hashem, I would see HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as it were. We try to, the religious man tries to transcend his existence in this world. So yes, Al Karchacha, he's here, but the Avoda is to not be here to the extent possible. And that's his Avoda. So like we saw in Tanya, it says, if the eyes were given permission to see, and you see that what he's saying is, and you should try not to see, you should try to transcend this world. And this relates to many spheres. It relates to asceticism. Everything in this world is really a distraction. Is it? Think about the first parak of Mesilas Yesharim, right? Man was placed in this world, was created with Aneg al Hashem. That's what it's all about. And the Makom HaTainug isn't here. And we're here to get to the Makom HaTainug. And everything in this world is a distraction from that Tainug, from that Dveikus, from that connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And basically, what's the Avoda? Not to get distracted by Olam Hazeh, and to the extent possible while you're in this world, and hopefully afterwards, to be Mizdabek El Hashem, to transcend your physicality. That's the Avoda. Read the first paragraph of Mesilas Yesharim. Now, that is also a very practical one. That's why Mesilas Yesharim is such an incredible Musar Sefer. He does teach you how to do it, given the reality. It's realistic in that sense. But when you read Parak Aleph, you see that what's it all about? Transcending this world. As I said, it relates to looking at everything in this world. You know, Chovos Alvavos, it talks about how the religious person abhors materiality. So that's what he means to say, that it's in opposite directions. Halachic man is the opposite. It's about this world. It's about perfecting this world. Let's read another passage, and we'll try to understand a little better. This is from 32. The halacha is not at all concerned with a transcendent world. The world to come is a tranquil, quiet place that is wholly good, wholly everlasting, and wholly eternal, wherein a man will receive the reward for the commandments which he performed in this world. Right? So, like we said, look at the first paragraph of Mesilas Yesharim. It's all about Olam Haba. He's created for Olam Haba. He's thinking about Olam Haba. Thinking, how do I get to Olam Haba? The Ish Halacha has no interest in that. He believes in it, but that has nothing to do with him. However, the receiving reward is not a religious act. Therefore, a halachic man prefers the real world to a transcendent existence, because here in this world, man is given the opportunity to create, accomplish, while there, in the world to come, he is powerless to change anything at all. I think the credo of halachic man is this Mishnah. Huay Omer, Yafesh Ha'achas, B'tshuva Maisim Tovim Ba'olam Hazeh Mikol Chayim Haba. Yafesh Ha'achas, Shel Kars Ruach Ba'olam Haba Mikol Chayim Hazeh. So if you're looking for Kars Ruach, it's going to come, it's going to be amazing. But that is no interest. I'm not interested in that. You know, the stories of the Vilna Gaon willing to give away all of his Olam Haba for a mitzvah are a reflection of this philosophy. The idea, you know, it's, and this is what I meant before when I said the Rambam isn't the Ish Halacha. The Rambam actually also longs for transcendent. If you look at Mor Nevuchim 351, it's all about how a person can transcend this world, how we can, the greatness of the Avos, and Moshe Rabbeinu was that even when they were involved in the mundane aspects of this world, their head was in a different place. And if you transcend this world and you connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu constantly, then you're zochah to constant hashgacha and all those things. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Tshuva, Perek Ches, I think, Kama Kame David L'chayolam Haba. How much did David long for Olam Haba? Why does he long for Olam Haba? Because that's the ultimate place of Dveikus. With HaKadosh Baruch Hu, here we're limited. We can't be Mizdabek as long as we have a physical body. So David HaMelech longs for. He doesn't long for Olam Haba Schar. And that's an important thing. In Perek Yud of Hilchos Tshuva, the Rambam writes that being Oved Hashem in order to get rewarded, even rewarding Olam Haba, is a low level of Avodas Hashem. That's Avodah Meira. The highest level of Avodas Hashem is Avodah Me'ava. It's Oses Emes Mipneshu Emes. So when the Rambam writes that David HaMelech longed for Olam Haba, it doesn't mean that he was motivated to do mitzvos because he wanted Olam Haba. No, that's what we do. And there's a place for it, and we talk Shalom Lishma Balishma. That's not the Madrig of David HaMelech. David HaMelech longed for Olam Haba because he loved HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he yearned to embrace HaKadosh Baruch Hu and connect to him in a way that was impossible in this world. So he longed for Olam Haba. But it's the same transcendence. If you look at the Rambam, again, in 351, he has that whole metaphor of the palace, right? The different madregos. And the highest madrega, the seventh madrega, is being misdabek to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, being misache to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a mystical union. The Rambam was very mystical. He wasn't a makubal, but he was very mystical. And this union, mystical union with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is what a person should seek in this world. And you have to, therefore, you have to be poorish from this world and think about God constantly. And that's the avodah. And even, like, outlines how you're supposed to get there, because it's not easy. You start off by thinking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu when you're saying Kriya Shema. And then, you know, when you're davening, and then tells you step by step, then when you're learning it, you know, when you're trying to fall asleep at night, and all those things. And hopefully, after years and years of practice, you'll be able to be thinking about God. That is, so the Rambam is not halachic man. Halachic man is not trying to transcend this world. He's trying to do mitzvahs in this world. What's David that longing for? For the chassid, for the Rambam, shifti beis Hashem, kol yimei chayai means olam haba. And what does it mean for a halachic man? It means the base medrash. It's a different place. It's this world.
There is a mitzvah of avas Hashem, dveikus b'Hashem.
All those things are true. So how do you do? What's dveikus b'Hashem?
It's one of the shish mitzvahs.
It's true. Nobody is
Shema Yisrael.
What does? So let's break it up. Hashem. So what's dveikus? How do you get to Vekas for homo religion, for halachic man?
So there's Talmud Torah. I understand.
Talmud Torah. You learn Negayim and Olavos. David HaMelech wanted Tehillim to be the level of Negayim and Olavos, and he asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and as far as we could tell, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said no. And how are you misdabek by HaKadosh Baruch Hu? The greatest instantiation of the Ratzon Hashem is Negayim and Olos, and Yivamos and Nida. That's it. That's it. No philosophy. No. Kabbalah has a role. I mean, Nefesh HaChaim is full of Kabbalah. But what is the C? Negayim and Olos. Right? David HaMelech asked for Tehillim to be like the Negayim and Olos, and probably the answer was no. So the answer, that's Dveikus. Because, and why is it Dveikus? Because the greatest Gilui of Ratzon Hashem is in the Torah. So you learn Torah. That's it. That, he's not... Yafesha achas b'tshuva u'maisim tovim ba'olam hazeh mikol
chayolam.
But it's true, and it's a ha'ara, but that's included. And that is, so even if the, you know, the philosophy of the Alter Rebbe is correct, then I don't know that there has to be a machlokas about that. But that's not something to think about. And there's no nafkamina, because we're not as it were trying to not see this world. And in fact, if you ask like what's wrong with this desire for transcendence, so the Rav Halachic Man has a number of issues. He thinks that, among other things, by trying to transcend this world, you don't see the needs of this world. You don't help people. Mm. You know, somebody goes ahead and they're hungry and they ask for your help. You say, well, what's wrong with you? Now, that's an exaggeration. And I'll bring a story from the Alter Rebbe, the famous story from the Alter Rebbe that shows that obviously they weren't. You know the story, the crying baby?
Sure.
So, not everybody knows. So the Alter Rebbe was once learning in I guess it was like a little house or something. And I think his son or grandson was there. And next door there was a baby, and the baby was crying. And whoever the other person in the story was, I don't remember, was so engrossed in his learning, he didn't hear the baby cry. I think it was the father of the baby. And the Alter Rebbe, it was the grandfather, I guess, stops his learning and goes and picks up the baby and calms the baby down. And whoever the other person in the story was, like, said, oh, you know, I'm sorry, I was so like engrossed in my learning, I didn't hear the baby. And the Rebbe told him, you know, learning is a sharper language, but I don't remember exactly how the language goes. But basically, you can't allow your learning to not let you hear the baby crying. You know, when Klal Yisrael is crying, you have to listen. And obviously, you know, whatever homo religiosus is, you know, they certainly are not denying chesed and the like. But it is, I think, the philosophy of homo religiosus is one that very much does come through in these prakim in Tanya. Where again, to the extent that when you read it, you know, you wonder if he thinks that he exists. And so, even though I think the answer is yes, we do exist. But you're sort of wondering about it the whole time, because it's not obvious why it should even be true, according to what he's saying. And I think that's, again, it's sometimes helpful to, you appreciate the chiddush by sort of looking at the contrast. Okay, so we got up to the Ha'ara at the bottom of Perek Dalet, which is at the bottom of your page. So as I mentioned before, the last couple lines of Perek Dalet of Shai Yichud the Hamuna, and then all of Perek Hay are this Ha'ara. So it's a parenthetical point. So it's parenthetical in a sense that, yes, he's going off topic to discuss something else, but obviously he felt it's very important to discuss now, and that's why he puts it in, and devotes, it's not like a little footnote. You know, some of the Ha'aros are, you know, on the side of the page in the smaller text, but this is in the regular text. And so obviously the Alter Rebbe thought that this is important to know. So we'll do the first part of it today, and then maybe next time we'll continue. We'll see. V'hine, b'chiddush ha-tzimtzum v'hester ha-chiyos nikra b'shem kelim. V'ha-chiyos atzmo nikra b'shem or. So we have here, obviously, two mashalim. So again, we have these two kohos. We have the koach, like we said, of chesed and gvura, Hashem and Elohim. Gvura is tzimtzum. It's the limitation. It's holding back. And it's that very holding back that allows everything else to exist. Because if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wasn't mitzamtzim, if he didn't express that gvura, if he didn't hold himself back, then there's no makom for anything else to exist, certainly not for us to exist. So this concept of tzimtzum, so we have these two things. We have these two midos, right? Hashem and Elohim. And now he's giving another mashal to help us understand it. It's Or and Kalim. So why is that an appropriate mashal? And this is a mashal that is in all of Kabbalah. It's always you see these two things. So let's try to understand it. What is a kli? A kli is bound. It's limited. It's finite. It's defined. Or is not. Or will, at least in theory, go on forever, unless at least there's something that stops it, that prevents it from continuing in its path. It's not something that's naturally bound or limited. That's the koach of the Nesina. That is the koach of chesed, of this limitless giving. So that's why these are the appropriate mashalim. That the tzimtzum is the kli, which limits, which binds, which contains. Again, I think the type of kli, at least that I assume he has in mind, is like a bucket, like a bowl, like something that has defines. So it holds the ore, but at the same time, it also limits the ore. What I think he's also adding here, and we'll see, is that the point that we should appreciate that even this koach of gvura shouldn't just be seen as a negative force. You could have imagined these two things as positive and negative. So Hashem is positive, Elohim is just the limiter, it's the negative, it's the gvuros, it's the limits. It is also a positive force. It's a different type of positive force. It's a positive limiting force, which allows us to exist, but it's also, in a sense, a positive force. So what does he say? Again, or in Kalim. A shekamosha kli mechase masha besocho, just like the kli covers, hides, obscures that which is in it, kach b'china satzimtzum mechase umastir ha'or v'hachios ha'shofea. So too, the tzimtzum is mechase, it limits, it's mastir, the or. And again, it's through that hester that everything that exists can exist. The kelim, what are those kelim? Hein hein ha-osios. Shesharshan hei osios natzpach. So, we didn't actually learn the first parak together, but there he sort of described how it's the osios, and the tziruf otzios and the tzirufe otzios that create the world are the basis that for creation of the world. That's part of the idea that Hashem created the world. The dibor menatzpach are the kalim. Why? Because they're the ed. Menatzpach are the shoresh, the sofiot letters. Right? There are five letters, mem, nun, tzadi, pei, and chaf, that have a sofit. And what does this letter do? It ends the word. You can't go on until you have a menatzpach letter. In theory, you could just add to the word. When you get to the menatzpach, the word ends. And that's the koach. So when we're looking for what letters reflect this koach of tzimtzum, of vura, of limitations, these are these five letters. So that's the koach of tzimtzum, which is a kli, is symbolized, you know, everything in Kabbalah has... In letters, it's menatzpach. In like mashalim, it's kelim. In words, so that's what menatzpach is. Shein hey gvuros hamechalkos umafridos hahevel v'hakol behei motzaos hapa. So,
any correlation with the menatzpach? What's the lashon of the Gemara that the Nevi'im came up with?
Yes, I assume that relates to that. If I were guessing. I'll tell you, well, just let me translate the words and then I tell you like a theory I have about that, which actually relates a little bit to Inyana Dioma. So he's saying over here, there are five types of sounds that the letters are divided into it. I forgot what they are, but there are five sounds.
Gutturals,
teeth, right.
Tongue.
And the menatzpach are, so these five are the each of the category of sounds has a sofit letter, and that's what he said.
Men and pair the same way.
I don't know if that's a speech therapist. So les avos chavav chav beis osios the shomesh ahek vuros who butsina de kardunisa, which is the candle in the dark. We'll explain what that means as well. Shigvura ila de atik yomin, the shoresh achasadim hu gamkin chesed de atik yomin kiyadu alio dechein. So usually when you see something like kiyadu alio dechein, that means okay, I'm not going to understand this. I have to go on to the next parak. But maybe we'll just close with what you're saying, the idea of so why is it in Yana Dioma? So where do we find who came up with Menatzpach? So again, it's a cryptic Gemara, but who?
Nevi'im.
Surim, Omdim.
What?
Menatzpach, Surim, something.
So it was the period of the... the Sofim.
Right.
Right, which reflects sort of, I would say, the second tkufa of Jewish history. We talked about this a little before, that if we could really divide Jewish history, broadly speaking, into two tkufas. There's the biblical period, which is dominated by Tarshish B'Chisav. It's a time where there's nevuah, where for the most part, the nisyonos are in atheism. Everybody believed in something spiritual. So the question was, it Hashem or was it Avodah Zarah? Was it a Navi Emes or a Navi Sheker? There was Nisan, there was Kishuf. The second kufa is one of Hester. And the Avodah is to discover HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the darkness, where there isn't this Gilui Panim, there's Hester Panim, and we have to discover HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it's Dafka, therefore, I think it makes sense why in that Kufa, there was a revelation of the Sofiot letters, of the Gvura.
The script changed. I mean, the Menafseh only when they switch from...
It's all that, and that's just it relates to Nyana Dioma. You know, it says on the eighth day of Teves, the Torah was translated into Greek, and it was something that couldn't properly be done, and 3 days of darkness today entered into the world. And what happened ninth day is something secret, so we can't talk about that either. And Ezra died. But it relates to this tkufa again. And the point is that the koach of tzimtzum became much more apparent in the world in the second kufa. And I'll just say one manifestation of that. One is the Gemara we referred to last time, the Anshe Knesset HaGadola Rechsira Tar Lioshna. Why? Because they were able to discover in this world of Hester, Gvura, and Noros, Hein Hein Vurosa, Hein Hein Norosa. So where the Nevi'im, Daniel Yirmiyah on the first kufa, saw things like Akam Makarkarim, Behechal, Akam Mishtadim Bivanav as a stira to Hashem. Here they said, no, this is the stira, this is it. Hein Hein Gvura Osav, Hein Hein Nora Osav. In the first kufa, so the Gilui of Hashem was Mikamocha Ba'ilim Hashem. In the second kufa, it's Mikamocha Ba'ilmim, it's Hashem. It's seeing, doing what Titus did in the Kodesh HaKadashim, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu not zapping him, not destroying the world. That, it's mi kamocha ba'ilim Hashem. You see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the silence, in the ilim. That's the osios menatzvach. And that's why it's dafka in this tkufa that there's the giloy of these things. Okay. Pick up Bezos Hashem next week.
Sorry. Moshe's Sefer Torah then. I mean, what...
So there's a shaila in halacha that the Rishonim deal with, which is how do we understand that? And Einavi Rishayil Chadish. The Gemara really brings up the issue. Einavi Rishayil Chadish, Davar, and the like. So that's a shaila that needs to be addressed. Even, you know, the shaila of the letters and what does it mean?
I'll send you a shiur on it.
Yes, it was recorded. So if you email me, I'll upload it. Okay, Shkayach, everyone.